Thank you for listening, but please be advised that I don't just believe shit I hear on podcasts, and I hope you don't either. Be skeptical and look into things for yourself. If you find that I was wrong about something, the best thing you can do for me is to let me know. You can do that at livingthroughextinction@gmail.com. Please also be aware of the fact that I do swear and I don't bleep anything out, so listener discretion is advised. I'm Ruby, and this is episode 111 of Living Through Extinction, a short to the point podcast with science, skepticism, and activism, as well as environment and wildlife, and stuff I find important or interesting that I want to learn more about. Today I talk about the simplicity of truth and tidal power, provide an update on orcas and yachts, and share a lovely story about a capybara foster mom to animals of all kinds. This is my semi-annual break time. I take 1 2-week period off at the end beginning of the year for the holidays, and I take one off right in the middle of the year for yard work. I've been transforming my lawn into a type of foodscape the last 4 summers, and it's pretty all-consuming from the moment the snow's gone to the final harvest and cleanups. But it sure feels good to look at before pictures and see what I've created. In May, I recorded an episode with a gentleman from the Sean Geek podcast and put the science and skepticism aside for a bit to discuss things that I'm nerdy about with Sean and Todd. And oh my god, I had so much fun! We talked things like D&D, board games, classic Harley Quinn, and our shared experiences of coming from small towns where nothing we're into was available to living in a place where there were comic and game stores. It was a total joy to just nerd out about the things that make me happy. Go check it out. That's the Sean Geek podcast. They have episodes about music, comics, movies, and more. If you have joined me before, then thank you for returning. I really do appreciate you. If this is your first time listening to Living Through Extinction, welcome, and thank you for giving it a try. I hope you find it both fun and informative. And if you're interested in supporting the show, all the possible ways are listed after the final segments and thank yous. Truth is simple. It can be shown. It can be repeated. Methods exist to demonstrate it as true. People in different fields will be able to come at it from different points of view and agree upon the results. Predictions can be made when based on truth. It's hard to do this with a lie because different groups of people come up with different lies and it's hard to keep it all straight between them. Look at human-caused climate change for a clear, easy example. 99.9% of scientists coming at it from all fields of study agree it's true. 100% of scientists involved in climate, environmental, and atmospheric sciences agree it's true. All of these people, in all of these fields, agree on what it is, what the causes are, how to mitigate it, and what the results will be if we do nothing. All agree that something needs to be done if we give a shit about future generations. Then there are those who say human-caused climate change is not real. That's the lie. They obviously do not understand the extreme amount of people in different fields all over the world who would have to be in on that. It's ridiculous, really. But forget all that. When something is not true, the only thing people in that camp will agree on is that one tidbit. So they all agree that human-caused climate change is made up, but none of them agree on how or why. This group says it's a natural process of the Earth and there's nothing we can do. That group says we're fools to think we can affect the planet, as only their God can do that, so there's nothing we can do. Another group says it isn't happening at all, so doing anything is a waste of time. Yet another says the end times are right around the corner, so why waste your time doing anything about it? Those who decry the truth all come up with their own reasons for it, while those who speak the truth, no matter what angle they come at it from, will have a general agreement upon the who, what, where, when, and why. Understanding this is a very good tool for those who are new to scientific skepticism, and we will all be better off if more people learn to be skeptical, damn it. The orbit of the moon is a regular, predictable thing. The gravitational forces of that moon pull on our largest bodies of water as it goes by. Then, when it gets out of gravitational reach, the pull on the water is released and it goes back to its natural position. We've been doing great with harnessing renewable resources such as wind and solar, but what about the massive energy contained within the ebb and flow of tides? If we ever decide to do the right thing and make as much of a switch to renewables as possible, then we have to look at every possible renewable energy source our planet can provide. We know water is powerful. We already use the water movement energy of rivers. I grew up around hydro towns, so this is very familiar to me. There is definitely wasted energy occurring when oceans are getting smacked back and forth by the pull and release of the moon. The best part, though? Tides are 100% predictable, and there is never a day without an ebb and a flow. Both of these factors are superior to those of both solar and air. This is a power source that would be reliable regardless of wind speeds or cloud cover. And water is nearly 1,100 times more dense than air, so the energy from it is much more concentrated. It's kind of a no-brainer that we should be learning more about it and researching how to harness it. Of these tides, some of the most powerful are in the UK, so it's not surprising that they've been putting the most research into this possible resource. Today, there are incredible devices being tested off their coast every day. Their figures have told them that if they can get a reliable way to harness tidal energy, it could meet as much as 11% of the UK's annual electricity demands. That's pretty great! Combine that with wind and solar, and they've made a huge leap towards minimizing dependence on fossil fuels. We've had an understanding of the power of the tides since medieval times. The Woodbridge Tidal Mill has been using tidal energy to mill its grain for almost 1,000 years. But to turn that into electricity for today's needs has always been way too hard. Because the ocean is a brutal, violent environment, and water eats away at everything over time, especially salt water. The power of water can smooth a rock or carve out a canyon, and the salt of the water can be corrosive to metals, which a lot of parts are often made from. The next challenge to overcome is maintenance. The point of the structures would be to collect power from the water in places where it's most powerful, where it's smashing up against the rocks. It's violent and dangerous, and I imagine some ingenuity will have to be developed to make maintenance safe or even possible. But there are all sorts of groups of incredible engineering scientists working on these ideas now. There are giant turbines on the sea floor, huge floating devices that look like they have large wings, and even one called the Minesto Dragon, which uses the power of a spinning kite, but in the water instead of the air. This is the type of science that holds the possibility of giving our future generations a better, healthier world. I'm about to take my semi-annual break and didn't want to end things for a month by talking about the world falling apart. So today I'm finally going to do an update on everyone's favorite sea hero, the orcas, also known as killer whales. I have to admit, I was a bit dismayed when just days after recording a segment about how orcas make precision cuts in their prey in order to nudge out desired organs, the biggest news in the world was suddenly orcas attacking yachts. That was episode 87. It would have been great if stories like that had come to my attention a week earlier. I would have totally rewritten the orca segment to include it. By this time, I already had a bunch of other topics going on, but now I have finally gotten back around to it. When we all started talking about the hero orcas, that wasn't actually the first time orcas had done something like this. It was the first time me and a lot of the people I know were made aware of it. This activity has been on the rise in recent years, so it's now a known, common thing that people are preparing for. Orcas are the largest member of the dolphin family, and like dolphins, they're very intelligent, highly social, and playful creatures. They are also apex predators who hunt other predators such as sharks, along with whales and a variety of other prey. The increase in the frequency of unusual behavior was first noted by researchers in 2020, so of course they started watching for and recording at that point. And since then, these unwanted interactions with orcas have been increasing. From July through November 2020, 52 attacks were reported. In 2021, another 197 were reported. In 2022, that number was 207. While about 20% of the vessels experienced severe damage, no humans have ever been harmed. One place where these encounters are commonly occurring is in the Strait of Gibraltar, which connects the Atlantic Ocean to the Mediterranean Sea. It separates Europe from Africa. According to conservation group GT Orca Atlantica, there are at least 37 orcas in the Strait of Gibraltar, and they have been responsible for hundreds of attacks since 2020. Their primary targets tend to be sailing yachts. The more minor interactions involve persistent approaches, but no physical contact, and the more severe interactions involve all sorts of damage, including total sinking. I imagine it could be terrifying, even if no damage is done. To give you an idea what people are experiencing, I'm going to briefly describe a few of the encounters. Most have been in the waters of southwestern Europe and North Africa, though there have been isolated incidents in other places as well. One pod attack sank a 50-foot yacht in the Strait of Gibraltar between Spain and Morocco. There were only two people on board, a couple. When an unknown number of orcas started ramming them, they called Spanish authorities for help, and a rescue team did get to them, but they were stuck out there for an hour with their boat going down and killer whales all around them. Can you imagine? This is one of the boats that was not able to be saved. It now lives at the bottom of the Strait of Gibraltar. Orca sank a sailboat with 5 passengers in July of 2022, and another with 4 passengers in November of that year. Remember, no people were hurt. People have gotten out physically fine every time. In 2023, a sailing yacht called Champagne encountered a larger orca with 2 smaller ones. The larger one rammed them from the side, while the smaller ones helped out by grabbing and shaking the rudder. I see this one all in cartoon form. The babies are having fun, helping their mom. Though they did pierce 2 holes in the rudder and break a piece off of it, so not fun for the people on board. In June of 2023, 2 65-foot racing yachts were in the final leg of the Ocean Race Global Sailing Competition when they were intercepted by orcas as they approached the Strait of Gibraltar. In October of that year, another boat was lost off the coast of Morocco. The Grazy Mama 2 was slammed in the rudder for 45 minutes, causing major damage and leaks. Again, the crew escaped safely, but the Moroccan Navy was unable to tow it to land, so it now rests near the port of Tanger Med. Just imagine a 45-minute barrage of these giants ramming your ship. That has got to be scary as fuck. The orcas have been typically approaching rather sneakily from the stern of the ships. They most frequently attack during the day, and attacks last on average about a half hour. There's lots of ramming and nudging all over, but the biting occurs mainly on rudders. Scrape marks have been found along the bow and keel as well, though. Their primary targets seem to be monohulled sailing vessels. They average about 12 meters long and travel almost 6 knots, which is quite slow compared to the orcas. Rudders have been split in half, bent at their stocks, and removed completely, and when sailors try to control the wheel or increase the speed during an attack, it often results in even more forceful pushings and attacks on the rudder. The Cruising Association, a club that supports sailors, has put out recommended safety protocols to follow in the event you run into some orcas. One of those recommendations is to disconnect the boat's autopilot and stay quiet. It's also recommended that when possible, ships should be staying in shallow waters where it's safest. This could make some trips a lot longer, however. There is anecdotal advice among sailors about throwing sand in the water to deter them. This one doesn't really make sense to me. Maybe someone out there can tell me how that works and make it make sense? Email me at livingthroughextinction@gmail.com. Why they are doing this is also interesting, though there is currently disagreement on that. Some see it as the orcas feeling threatened. They do have very sophisticated learning abilities, and I recall hearing about one orca being hit by a ship and then teaching other orcas that swam with it to attack ships. Others believe this is just play, and that the rudders are like toys to them. I saw it referred to as a learned fad that spread through the population. It was fun and became popular to do among orcas, kind of like human kids with fidget spinners when they first came out. Regardless of the reasons, conservationists are faced with quite a challenge. They are dedicated to preserving this endangered species population, but keeping people safe is also a high priority. Today's positive is brought to you by Cheesecake, the capybara foster mother to animals of all species, large and small. In northern Arkansas, there's an animal sanctuary called Rocky Ridge Refuge. The sanctuary cares for, shelters, and feeds animals of all types. Many of them are there for a very short time, as they're eventually adopted to their forever families. Some, however, are permanent. Cheesecake is one of those permanent residents. This is one of the cutest stories ever, but first, in case you're not aware of exactly who and what I'm talking about, a capybara is the largest rodent on Earth at this time. They are native to South America and make their homes in savannas and dense forests, always near a body of water. Their closest relatives would be guinea pigs and squirrel-like things called rock cavies. They're also related to chinchillas, but much more distantly. I personally can see the guinea pig thing, except capybara's heads are much more defined. It kind of seems like if they were fluffier, they would look just like a giant guinea pig. Capybaras are a very social species, usually found in groups of 10 to 20, but at times found in groups of up to 100. One of the things they're known for is their communal parenting. They have strong parenting instincts that lead them to not just look after their own babies, but to look after all babies together. Cheesecake was just a baby when brought to the sanctuary, so she lived with the owner in their home at first, along with the owner's dogs. So this capybara grew up playing with and sleeping with the dogs. As she grew, the occasional puppy litter would arrive. When this would happen, her parenting instincts would kick in, and she would adopt them. She'd sleep with them, eat with them, even discipline them when they were misbehaving. According to the sanctuary owner, puppy litters are usually pretty scared when they arrive, but Cheesecake would make them all comfortable and take care of them. One year, she took care of 4 entire litters. And that's not all. This friendly capybara has made friends with and adopted other animals over the years as well. She's taken care of a group of ducklings, a deer, a tortoise, some emus, and a miniature horse. Then there's Cheesecake's chicken. The sanctuary had a chicken that didn't like being around the other chickens. It stayed away from the rest and befriended Cheesecake instead. This chicken started riding around on Cheesecake's back. Then it gave up on the chicken coop completely and started sleeping with her. If it snows, this princess of a chicken refuses to get her feet wet and cold and will not get down from Cheesecake's back. So now she just lives in the same enclosure as Cheesecake, and at the refuge everyone calls her Cheesecake's chicken. A nice little bonus to the story is that the sanctuary took in a second capybara named Cobbler, and he and Cheesecake are living happily ever after with their chicken. If you would like to see Cheesecake and Cobbler for yourself, go to the sanctuary's Facebook page. Again, they are called Rocky Ridge Refuge. I am done for today. Please consider subscribing to the YouTube for short, skeptical videos. Thank you for joining me. May your health and sanity continue to be replenished daily. My eternal gratitude goes out to the following people. Jason Martin for helping me get started on this project more than 4 years ago. I wouldn't be doing this right now if not for him. Kathy Rayner for her musical contribution on the violin. Paul Palmer for his musical contribution on the guitar. He can be found at WPG Suitcase Drummer on Instagram. Dustin Harder for composing and recording the intro and outro for the show. You can find him on Instagram at Prairie Soul Music. And of course, thank you to my family and friends and the local podcast community for all your love and support. A very special thank you to Sean and Todd for having me on their awesome show, The Sean Geek Podcast. I got to leave all the seriousness behind and talk about the things I'm nerdy about, and it was so much fun. I hope you will choose to join me again in 4 weeks for episode 112 of Living Through Extinction. If you enjoy Living Through Extinction and would like to support the show, the best ways to do so are to subscribe and rate and to comment and like positive comments on your favorite podcast player, or you can help out by following, liking, and sharing on all the social medias. The show can be found under Living Through Extinction on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, YouTube, Pinterest, and TikTok, and under LTE Pod on Blue Sky, Hive, Tribal, and Twitter. There is also a Patreon at patreon.com/livingthroughextinction. There you can earn stickers, pins, masks, and more, as well as help me to plant some trees. If you have any comments, corrections, questions, or suggestions, please email them to livingthroughextinction@gmail.com or message me through one of the social medias.